AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction.
How do social media, gender roles, and ageism affect agriculture? Find out in Beyond the Field, a podcast brought to you by The Mosaic Company. Listen to the farmers who are changing the industry for the better. Visit beyondthefieldpodcast.com to learn more. As you might already know, there are over 2 billion bushels of surplus corn out there right now just waiting to solve some of the world's biggest problems. If you're a farmer, that gives you about 2 billion reasons to encourage people to use biofuels. Learn more at poet.com/ag. COVID-19 cases threaten to force another global economic shutdown, and Facebook, Google, and Twitter are testifying in front of the Senate right now. That means it's a risk-off kind of day, and that's got the ag commodities under heavy pressure, except for cattle. Cattle are holding on to modest gains.
From where, if you drive a car, I'll tax the street. If you try to sit, I'll tax your seats via Farm Journal broadcast. This is AgriTalk. And today, of course, it's our tax man, our tax expert, Paul Niefer, on how a Biden tax plan would impact farmers. And then it's on to the Farmer Forum with Luke Lauritsen and Nick Ehlers. We'll kick things off with all the latest details on EPA's dicamba ruling with Sonia Begeman and Margie Eckelkamp. I'm your daily Davis Michelson imposter, John Harith. And now here he is, our duty-free host, Chip Flory.
Yes, thank you. You're a regular old cat in the hat this week, aren't you?
Well, you know, Dr. Seuss yesterday, Beatles today. You mix it up a little bit.
I love it. It's perfect. How you doing, man? Everything good?
Good. Sunshiny day here in northern Indiana, and still no snow, despite everybody else getting it. So
Right. Yeah. I've still got green grass out there, and I'm thinking about moving some leaves around this afternoon when things get all done. So it's looking really good. Busy show today, man.
Yes.
We got a lot to cover, and we've got a major dicamba announcement. We are going to run down the Biden tax plan with Farm CPA Paul Niefer, and then Nick and Luke coming in for the Farmer Forum. Nick is right in the middle of the derecho corn area.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and some of the short videos that I've seen from Nick harvesting that crop, it's pretty tough. It is really tough. So,
but has he been able to pull some of it up and harvest it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, there's guys that are across the fence that are disking corn under.
Mm. Well, that's got to hurt.
It's crazy stuff. Okay, let's get right to it. What you got in the news, man?
Well, just a couple quick hits here so we can get to the details on the dicamba registration. Of course, there was the big news late yesterday as the EPA approved dicamba product labels for 5 years. There are some restrictions in place, though, with those new labels, and we'll get those details from Sonia and Margie in just a little bit. The stock market is down sharply this morning amid rising COVID-19 cases and the failure of Congress to pass a pandemic relief package. The Dow was down more than 700 points in early trading. And a new study by the Ag Retailers Association notes that if internal combustion engines are banned by 2035, then by 2050, ethanol consumption could drop by up to 90% to 1.1 billion gallons, and biodiesel consumption could decline by up to 61% to 0.8 billion gallons,
sure.
Chip.
Yeah. And every time we talk about this, I say it the same way that you do, John. If internal combustion engines are banned by 2035, it's actually the sale of new engines, internal combustion engines. Because I've said that a couple of times, and guys are like, wait a second, are you saying that we've got to get the trucks off the road and stuff like that?
Yeah, they're not going to pull anything existing off the roadway. Yeah, it's just retailers can't push anything out.
Exactly. And it's crazy talk to me, but we'll figure it out. Thanks, buddy.
Thank you.
All right. That's John Harith, Farm Journal News Director. Let's bring in Sonia Begeman. She is the Seeds and Production Editor for Farm Journal, and Margie Eckelkamp, Editor of The Scoop. Sonia, welcome. Margie, welcome. How are you guys?
I think still catching our breath from yesterday.
Yeah, I agree with that, Sonia.
I believe you. So, Sonia, fill us in. What's going on? What's the latest?
Okay, so like John said, we do have a new dicamba label. It is for three of the four products. So it's for Tavium, Ingenia, and Extendamax, which is BASF, Syngenta, and Bayer's products. It is a five-year unconditional registration, which is different than what we've seen in the past two registrations, which were two-year conditional registrations. So that's the first couple of significant changes. It does come with some new restrictions, which I think farmers and applicators need to be aware of. So one of the most interesting ones is that there are cutoff dates for when you can apply this dicamba over the top of cotton and soybeans. It's June 30th for soybeans, and that's nationwide, and July 30th for cotton, also nationwide. EPA is also going to require you to use a volatility reduction agent. So what those are is, Bayer is going to sell one, BASF is going to sell one. There's a whole bunch on the market already. They basically make sure that dicamba's pH does not get too acidic, which can promote volatility. Okay. And then another big change we're going to see is we've had downwind buffers in the past that were 110 feet. Now they're 240 feet minimum. And if you're in an area with endangered species, it's actually over 300 feet. Looks like a 310-foot buffer. So some pretty significant changes there. Other than that, there's a lot of, you know, the same things like wind speed, stuff like that, that we have in the previous one. And, you know, some of those things are still there. But we've got some pretty big changes here as well.
Yeah, big changes. But number one thing here, Sonia, is we've still got this as a tool to fight some of these the weed issues out there.
Absolutely. Yeah, they approved it. They said that they addressed the issues concerning FIFRA. And they're confident that even if they were to get sued again, which we've seen on Twitter, groups like Center for Food Safety already indicating they will, they think they can defend it this time.
Okay, very good. Margie Echokamp, editor of The Scoop. What does this mean for retailers?
Yeah, great question, Chip. I think what wasn't surprising about this announcement, or maybe it was surprising, is that we had been hearing it was going to come before the end of October. And what I think that really means for the industry is now there is this certainty that at least for now we have these herbicide tools moving forward, and the implications for that on seed decisions. I've heard from a lot of retailers that seed books are filling up. Farmers are making those decisions for the 21 crop year, and now they have, as you said, that tool in the toolbox. There, you know, with that certain level of certainty, and as Sonia shared the details of this label, there could still be further developments and actions by the individual states. There is now a nationwide cutoff, but just as an example, in 2020, Illinois had 6 additional considerations put on their restricted use pesticide label. So we will be watching that and what it could mean as far as further measures for use of these herbicides.
Okay. Sonia, in the first off, great point on the state restrictions that could still come up, Margie. That's something that we need to watch very, very carefully. I know you'll be doing that. Sonia, anything in the EPA announcement that would discourage the use of dicamba going forward? I mean, are all of these rules, regs, easy enough to work with?
The one that I'm seeing things on Twitter about, and I'm seeing questions about, is that cutoff date, that nationwide cutoff date. For some states, you know, they plant mid-May, late May for their soybeans. So is a June 30th cutoff going to be too early for them for that post-application? That's the big question I'm hearing now. EPA did indicate not only will they have the possibility to add more restrictions, it seemed like they would be working with states for local, like, exemptions almost. So it'll be interesting to see if states go to EPA and say, hey, June 30th is just too soon for us. Can we stretch this so our farmers can use it? I don't know if that's going to happen, but that's what I'm watching for.
Gotcha. Margie, final word here. Get your seed orders in now. We've got the certainty.
Go ahead and talk to your retailer. Talk about what is the best solution for your acres and know that for now, we have this tool in the toolbox.
Great job, you guys. That's Sonia Begeman, Seeds and Production Editor for Farm Journal. Margie Echokamp, Editor of The Scoop. We got Paul Nie for Farm CPA up next. From transforming overnight into a YouTube star to paving the way for women in agriculture, the stories of American farmers might surprise you. There aren't many places to hear the real stories of the American farm, until now. Beyond the Field by the Mosaic Company allows you to be a fly on the wall in these conversations. We interview farmers from different backgrounds and regions about how their paths have led to unexpected opportunities. In spite of challenges like dated gender roles and the looming presence of social media, these farmers show that with grit and creativity, you can forge your own way. They educate the public on agriculture's impact in unique ways and inspire the future generations of farmers to keep the world turning. These stories will entertain, educate, and most importantly, deepen your connection to farming in your community. Listen to the Beyond the Field podcast brought to you by the Mosaic Company. Listen today at beyondthefieldpodcast.com.
You need harvest results, not another radio ad. So let's get to the point. Channel Seedsmen place products to perform in your fields, and the results can speak for themselves. Get yield results from your area and less yapping at channel.com/yield. Huh, I guess less talking means more time for music. Classic rock, anyone? That's channel.com/yield for local harvest results. Always read and follow grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
Right now, there are over 2 billion bushels of surplus corn out there. That's a lot of corn, especially when you consider how many of the world's problems could be solved by finding markets for it. So, how do we use all this corn for good? POET is working on getting higher blends of ethanol into the marketplace so that demand grows right along with increasing corn yields. An increase in the fuel supply from 10 to 15% nationwide would result in a market of almost 2 billion bushels of additional corn demand for the American farmer. That's 2 billion really good reasons to encourage people you know to use biofuels. The more people understand about biofuels, the better local operations will do and the better off our planet will be. Help others understand the importance of biofuels and visit poet.com/ag to learn more about how POET is using corn from local producers to change the world.
America's Conservation Ag Movement would like to recognize USDA's Natural Resource Conservation Service for its efforts in contributing to healthier, more resilient production agriculture systems. To learn more, visit agweb.com/ACAM.
You know, we don't have many guests that have a dedicated bump, but this one is going to stick. Paul Niefer, Farm CPA for Clifton Larson Allen, joins us right now. How are you, Paul?
I'm doing great. I'm in Kansas and still got about 3,000 miles of driving before I get home, so that's okay.
Man, oh man. How's the weather?
Yesterday was about 8 degrees when I got up. Now it's a balmy 40, so it's not too bad.
Not too bad. Okay. Before we get to the Biden tax plan, a question for you came in off of Twitter. Are the forgiven Paycheck Protection Program loans taxable?
That's an interesting question. The forgiveness is non-taxable, but what the IRS has said right now is the expenses related to that forgiveness is non-deductible. So in a way, it's almost like the forgiveness is taxable because you can't deduct the expenses. Now, we're hoping that Congress and the stimulus package they're going to pass probably right after election is going to fix that. But for right now, forgiveness is non-taxable, but the expenses related to it are non-deductible.
Got it. Okay. We'll look for some clarity coming forward there. Okay, yeah. Man. Before we get into some of these details, just put a grade on what the Biden tax plan would be for agriculture.
For what I would call the more wealthier farmers, you know, they have a land base, they have a fair amount of acres. I'd give it about a C minus to a D plus. For farmers that typically, let's say, keep their income lower, it's probably about a B. You know, it could be a B minus, but it's certainly not an A for anybody.
Okay. Well, a lot of it comes down to that income, like you just said. So let's get into some of the details right here. We continue to hear that from the Biden campaign that taxes are not going up for anybody that doesn't earn $400,000 a year or more. Is that accurate?
Yeah, No, because what they're saying is we're going to keep the tax rates the same. You know, we're not going to raise the tax rates. But I think in the finer details, you know, you could see bonus depreciation disappear fairly quickly. You could see Section 179 get reduced down to a much lower number. You could see some changes in the cash method of accounting, which definitely would affect farmers. So they spout, we're not going to raise the rates on people making less than $400,000. Well, rates really have nothing to do with tax. Well, they have something to do with taxes, but it's all the other stuff you got to worry about.
Right. And right now we're talking about individuals. Anything else in that Biden tax plan for individuals that we need to be aware of?
Yeah, certainly for farmers, the individual side, he wants to raise the tax rate on capital gains. Now, he's talking about that would only be if your income's over $1 million. Well, that's how they started. But, you know, they want to raise that capital gains rate back up to being, you know, regular taxes. So it'd be a 39.6% rate. He wants to bring back the phase out of itemized deductions. He wants to make it the higher bracket. They're only worth 28%. So, yeah, I think for the average farmer, maybe not too much on the rate side, but certainly on how you calculate income, what type of income you're allowed to use, especially if they tweak cash method of accounting. That's going to affect all of our farmers.
Right. Okay. On the individual side again here, what about some of the child and dependent care tax credits? What's changed
they want to they're talking about temporarily they'd like to almost double the child tax credit and make that refundable on the child care. They want to make that I think a number I even heard was up to like $8,000. You know, if that happens, you know, child care providers will probably be pretty happy because they're going to have a lot more clients. So now again, that's talk. The president can propose these, but it has to go through Congress.
Right.
If the Senate stays Republican, most of this is not going to happen.
Okay. Any of the tax benefits tied to home ownership, any changes there?
Yeah, you know, they're talking about bringing back the new homeowner credit. I can't remember if it's an $8,000 or $15,000 type credit. You know, right now with interest rates so low and the providing of the loans, you know, I won't say it feels like 2005, 2006 all over again, but it seems to be pushing that way. So, I think there is that. But the problem is there's no inventory of homes. Everywhere I go, people complain about the fact, we've been looking for homes. We can't find them.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Okay. Gift tax. Any movement there?
Big changes. It sounds like they want to decouple gift tax from the estate tax. It sounds like they want to only allow you to maybe gift up to $1 million during your lifetime, tax-free or gift tax-free. And then above that, you're going to be hit with 40, 50, 60%, whatever it might be. Over on the estate side, they certainly want to reduce that lifetime exemption from the current almost $12 million back to six or lower. But even more negative, it sounds like either capital gains tax at death or no step up in bases. And that really would affect our farmers a whole lot more than reducing the lifetime exemption, at least for most of our farmers. And, you know, capital gains tax at death, that's an immediate tax and that kicks in. You know, now they may have some exemptions. Maybe the first million is exempt. If it's going to your spouse, that's obviously likely going to be exempt. Going to kids, maybe, you know, certain amounts exempt, but you know, that's an immediate tax. The step up in bases only hurts you when you sell it. So I hope they don't do a capital gains tax at death.
Right. Right. Okay. On the business side, the increase in the tax rate in the corporate income tax rate, does that have much impact?
It could. I mean, farmers have already faced, most farmers have already faced a tax increase because remember under the old laws, they were typically showing about $50,000 of income that was taxed at 15%. Now that's taxed at 21%. You know, Biden's talking about bringing the tax rate top rate back up to 28%. Maybe when they do that, they'll phase in a 15% bracket. I know the American Farm Bureau and several other farm organizations would like to see that. So that's possibility of being a positive. You know, I won't count on that, but that could be a positive.
Okay. Any incentives in this tax plan to change the way that they're doing business?
Yeah, they certainly, you know, they're pushing some type of, incentives probably for, I'm going to call it the Green Deal, whatever you might want to call it. I think they're going to probably beef up wind energy, solar energy. You know, a lot of our farmers are doing a fair amount of either wind projects or solar projects. I got several farmers that, you know, have done a fair amount of that. You know, that could be some type of incentive. You know, of course, now carbon taxes and all that type of stuff, who knows where that's going to go.
Right, right. I saw this in a summary. Equalizing the tax benefits of traditional retirement accounts such as 401ks and IRAs by providing a refundable tax credit in place of a traditional deductibility. What does that mean?
What it means is they're trying for what they're trying to do is for the lower income people, by providing a credit, they actually get more of a benefit. And then for the upper income people, by providing a credit, they're going to get less of a benefit. Because right now, the upper income gets a 37% benefit because they're in a 37% bracket, whereas the same deduction for somebody in the 10% bracket is only worth 10%. So they'll boost that credit up so that the 10% guy gets a better deal and the 37% guy gets a worse deal. So that's what they're trying to do by going to some type of a credit.
Okay. Eliminating certain real estate industry tax provisions. Are we talking about 1031?
I'm pretty sure that's what they're talking about is 1031. I think they also could be, you know, right now we have qualified improvement property, which is a, you know, which is a 15-year property that you can take bonus depreciation, deduct immediately. But I have a feeling we've already heard multiple times they'd like to eliminate 1031 exchanges. So now would there be exemptions for farmland and so on? You know, hard to know on that.
Right. What have we missed?
Well, I think also for those farmers that are a little bit higher income, if your income, according to Biden, is over $400,000, you're not going to be allowed to have the 20% qualified business income deduction. I think, you know, the current cooperative DPAD deduction that is able to flow through to farmers, that could get tweaked. You know, maybe eliminated, could be still around. So, and again, you know, this is all sort of very nebulous. Nobody really knows exactly what the details are.
Yeah, but Paul, it's sure nice to get a summary of what it could be in language that I can actually understand. Thank you, buddy. I appreciate your time.
You're welcome. Thanks, Chip.
You bet. That is Paul Niefer. You guys know him as the Farm CPA, blogs on agweb.com. He's from Clifton Larson Allen. We got the Farmer Forum next, Nick and Luke. There are over 2 billion bushels of surplus corn out there right now, just waiting to solve some of the world's biggest problems, which comes out to about 2 billion reasons why you should be encouraging people to use biofuels. If there was enough demand for biofuels, not only could we address these problems, that corn surplus could quickly help ag producers like you improve your operation. So help others understand the importance of biofuels and visit poet.com/ag to learn more about how Poet is using corn from local producers to change the world.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
And joining us now is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. Beej, ugly day.
Yeah, you know, what we're seeing in the grain and soy complex is part of a broader broad-based selling in commodities and the stock market. So we're seeing risk-based assets being liquidated here. And like I said, the grain and soy complex is part of that. You know, January beans, they're challenging the summer and fall uptrend, currently pivoting around that level and off-session lows. Interestingly, we found sellers at the 10-day moving average that dropped below that, but we found buyers at the 20-day moving average, which triggered the bounce-off session lows. So that'll be two levels to watch into the close, I think.
Okay.
December corn still, you know, uptrend still in place. They have dropped below the 10-day moving average. So, you know, a similar situation. I think the technicals are just a little bit more negative right now in soybeans than corn based on this morning's price action.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about why the risk off is happening. Is it coronavirus? Is it the big tech testimony? Is it what is it?
Yeah, I think the COVID concerns and the threat that we will see more lockdowns being enacted as we move forward with the increase in number of cases. That's probably a concern to the market. Election uncertainty, I think, is a concern too, as we're now less than a week away from the November 3rd elections. So just all that causing a little bit of anxiety in the marketplace today.
Gotcha. Okay, cattle holding on to some gains.
Yeah, kind of surprisingly, actually. Yeah. They're bucking the trend and not getting caught up in that broad-based sell-off I talked about. Maybe we'll see some higher cash cattle trade later this week, and I think that might have something to do with the strength this morning.
Got it. Thanks, Brian. This is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady on Markets Now.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. We've cleared the schedule for you. Give us a call at 855-482-5524 and join the conversation.
All right, welcome back to AgriTalk. Ran out of time to mention what's happening in hogs when we were talking with Brian Grady from Pro Farmer. Hogs are about a buck and a half, 2 bucks lower in the front 4 contract months. So, yeah, some heavy pressure in lean hogs today. We're going to get this Farmer Forum going, which is sponsored by America's Conservation Ag Movement. You can learn all about the movement and the partners by going to www.agweb.com/ACAM. Luke Lauriston's over in eastern Nebraska, joins us right now. How you doing, Luke?
Good, Chip. How's it going today?
It's going well, going well. What are you doing?
We finished up harvest Monday. We're on to putting our P&K on right now, trying to get that broadcasted on. And kind of, we had some snow and some colder weather, so waiting for it to dry a little bit so we can start doing some dirt work and some ditches filling in and some tree cutting. There's always trees to be cut, it seems.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I'm a little surprised to hear that you're done with harvest, Luke.
Yeah, it was rapidly fast when it was kind of a shorter crop than usual. It doesn't take long, and when it gets really dry really fast, you don't have to manage it as much, you know. We had corn drop, and a lot of people thought that. We had corn drop from 20% to 13% in a matter of 10 days.
Wow. Good grief. All right. Now, don't put him on the air. Nope, don't put him on the air yet, because he could be all kinds of frustrated, and I don't want him to – he needs to get the language warning first. So as long as he promises to keep it clean, let's bring him in. Nick Ehlers, Eastern Iowa.
Yeah.
How you doing, buddy?
I'm good. I'm coming up with some new combos, but it's all right.
I'll bet you are. I'll bet you are. Okay.
Just so everybody. All the slip clutches work.
There you go. There you go. Just so everybody knows, Nick is right along Highway 30 in eastern Iowa, and that is the spot that just got smoked by the derecho back on August 10th. What's it like trying to harvest corn, man?
Oh, we're on the south end of what you would call the bad of the derecho.
Okay.
And so we got a harvest, and it's just – I've harvested a few fields of down corn every few years or some, but just the entire corn crop flat, you know, I haven't seen a snoot in the corn the whole season. One way sometimes, one way at an angle sometimes. It's just however you can get it.
Yeah, well, I was going to ask you, have you learned any new tricks in how to get that crop out of the field?
Patience. I mean, I don't know how we would have done this 20 years ago without row scent and automatic header height and a lot of the perks that we have now.
Yeah. Well,
it's amazing what technology has done to get this crop.
Interesting. So. Yeah. Yeah, Luke, what we would have done 20 years ago is we would have taken a lot of dirt through the combine is what we would have done, right?
Well, that's still going on. Steel snoot 20 years ago.
Yeah, Yeah, that's right. That Nick, you said that's still going on?
Yeah, it's still going on. When we were dry a week or so ago, I mean, we didn't have rain for a long time. That helped. And then just that little bit of moisture has made it want to pull out. And, you know, you run augers or end cones on the end, and now that's starting to pull it in. And so then you get the rip balls, and it's gotten to be maybe a little more frustrating.
Okay. What's it done to the yield?
Oh, yield is all over the place. Nothing's great. Let's just get that out of the way.
Yeah.
But what we have is, I guess where it's really down, it's bad. You don't know what you're getting. And I would probably argue that anybody's yield monitor isn't going to pick up anything. It's just what's in the hopper when you get to the end of the field. So.
Yeah. Yep.
It's impossible to keep a yield monitor calibrated in this stuff.
Yeah. What about quality? Has it and moisture? I mean, are you running into a bunch of variability because of that?
Grain quality is surprisingly good.
Good.
The test weight is there. I mean, we're not seeing much damage. We spray a lot of fungicide, and we're usually spraying a lot of the newer fungicides, so we still got some moisture. Our corn hasn't plummeted in moisture, so we're still drying. But yeah, the grain quality's been good. That's kind of been the shining light. Is grain quality is good. So it's
good.
Not something we have to worry about.
So. That's great to hear, Luke. When you were doing your summary, you said that you know a bit of a short crop over your way. I know that you are a proponent of hashtag no yield tweets, but how does it compare to your APH?
Oh, I'd say we're 20 under APH this year.
Oh,
we were holding on pretty good, and it's just a matter of where the rain fell. You go 6 miles south of me, those guys are pretty happy because they were in line with APH. They had good beans. Good corn. It's just a matter of where the rain fell, but it's all over the board in our neck of the woods. I got guys not too far away from me in another county that are having pretty good yields this year, and we were just dry in Washington County, and some spots Washington County dry and some spots weren't, but it rained, like Nick said, it rained all over. But when we had that blowtorch finish in August, it didn't help anything. It didn't help the irrigated, it didn't help the dry land, it didn't help the beans.
Right. Okay. Let's switch gears a little bit here. I want to go to the dicamba announcement. How big of a deal is this, Luke?
I mean, it's a big deal. I mean, I guess to make a joke about it, to read the dicamba regulations and to read Joe Biden's tax plan, they're both confusing. They're both hard to comply with. I mean, it's a product that works. Obviously, the people will use it, love it. We use it as a burn down. We like it that way. We've never sprayed it post personally. I get scared because I've had enough confrontations with status, and I know it's changed, but it's still the mindset of you don't know what's going to happen to it when you put it on. So it's confusing. But
and all these rules and regulations are talking about over the top application and the additive to bring down some of the volatility in it. Would you consider using it post now?
Yeah, I mean, some of it, if we have to, we'll look at the situation, and we're going to have to make some phone calls to make sure everybody around us is in good deeds and stuff. But, you know, it's still, I've done it maybe, I think we did it once last year where we got some beans were up. But it's just, it makes you on edge when you're doing it, I'm afraid. And I've sprayed enough corn in my life that I've seen it move. But, yeah, it's people like it, people use it. I mean, good for them. It's just, it makes you a little paranoid, I guess, as a farmer yet.
Yep. Nick, what about you? Is this a big deal for you?
Oh, we need the mode of action out there. We can't narrow our options. I mean, I see that. It's just the people that abuse it that really give it a bad name. I've seen guys do a wonderful job of spraying it, and then there's others that, you know, should be an applicator, and I think that's the issue with anything.
Yeah.
I mean,
All right.
We need it. What we desperately need is a mode of action for a residual that water hemp and pigweed can't break through.
Yeah.
So,
absolutely.
It's just a Band-Aid on a bigger problem.
Okay. Hey, Sonia mentioned the shutdown date, the nationwide shutdown date, June 30 on over the top for soybeans. Is that too early, Nick?
I don't think I've ever seen anybody follow the rules if they don't, you know. Good ones follow the rules and others don't, so.
Yeah.
And that's it makes me laugh, I guess.
Yeah, and Luke, that's part of the problem with all of this. It's the off-label use that creates problems for those that try to follow the label, right?
Correct. And like I said, I get it. People spray to have good luck with it, but you don't know humidity and volatility, and it might move. And if somebody's going to load up and not spray a labeled product, you don't know that. That's the scary part. Some guys are going, well, this product's, you know, just as good as dicamba, but we'll spray it. Well, that's the one that gets us in trouble, and that's the one that gets the bad rap on it. I'm okay with the June 30th cutoff in our area, obviously, because most of the beans are done sprayed by July 4th, barring the weather. Got to get a little more residual on with things, so you want to be done by then.
Yep. Go ahead, Nick.
Yeah, I agree. It just comes down to the good ones and the bad ones that are going to give it a name, but we need more than one. I mean, we have basically two in the arsenal without it that will still kill some of these problem weeds. So we need something. So,
yeah, Nick, you're coming back to that. How big of a problem is the resistance in Eastern Iowa?
Oh, it's been here a while and it's not getting any better. So, we've seen the water hemp. I think we've got giant ragweed that's resistant to some modes, and it's not going away, that's for sure.
Right.
We haven't seen the Palmer breakout yet. It's around.
Yeah.
I think it came in some cottonseed holes for some dairy places, but it's around, but it hasn't broke free yet.
Right. Yeah, every time we see it, a knife comes out, and you go out and get that cut out. There's no doubt about that. All right, we've got a farmer forum going. We've got Nick Ehlers from Eastern Iowa, Luke Lauriston from Eastern Nebraska. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit about that Biden tax plan. Let's think about the potential of losing 1031s. Let's talk about some of those child credits because, we're talking two dads right here. That might be a big deal. And how about the solar credits? Some tax credits on solar, Nick. We'll find out what Nick thinks next.
America's Conservation Ag Movement would like to recognize the Nature Conservancy for its efforts to help farmers build healthier soils and a more resilient agriculture system. To learn more, visit agweb.com/ACAM.
And thanks to America's Conservation Ag Movement for sponsoring the Farmer Forum. It is a partnership designed to help all U.S. farmers more rapidly scale the adoption of conservation ag. All right, let's get back to the Farmer Forum. We've got Nick Ehlers from Eastern Iowa, Luke Lauriston from Eastern Nebraska. Guys, let's talk marketing here for just a second. At McDonald Tony says the Store and Ignore campaign is live at the bottom of the hour today on AgriTalk. Is that the plan, Luke?
The market's not really telling us that, though, is it?
Right.
Kind of telling us to move stuff here pretty quick, or move it or lose it, I guess.
I guess to our
newsletter subscribers, we are admitting that maybe it's not a good thing to sit on this stuff. Take your cash and go home.
Love it. Nick, when we had Paul on talking about the Biden tax plan, did your ears perk up on maybe some credits for solar?
Yeah, but we've taken advantage of that. We did that at the beginning of the Trump years because we were scared that he was going to do away with a lot of the credits that were there from the previous administration.
Right.
So I don't know, maybe there'll be something added to it if you have something existing, but I think we've kind of capitalized on that.
Yeah, tell us, if you don't mind, give us a little bit of the detail of what you did.
Well, we did a whole project where anywhere we are with a provider that's not a real co-op. So, like, we're with Alliant Energy on our grain site, and I'm with Alliant at my home. And you can net meter for your year, which you can basically take your usage for the year and design a system around that. Uh-huh. And you can bank that then, so you can use those banked kilowatt hours when you in your peak times, like say the drying setup when it's going now, or your home in the winter when you're not don't have as much sun. So you can almost zero out your bill for the year if you're you know, if you watch it. But it's just nice to, you know, have a bill that's basically your meter fee.
Yeah.
And you're providing electricity back to the grid. You know, when power goes out, you don't have power either. Those systems have to see the grid in order to run. But it's pretty state-of-the-art stuff. So.
Yeah. You're glad you did this, aren't you?
Yeah, we are. So we're glad we did it. I think the payoff is a little longer, and we had figured it as being a little longer than they promote. But there's some credits that have come back, that some energy grants and stuff that we did miss that would have made it faster. But you know, overall, I think it's good.
Good.
Especially if you can use renewable energy and get credit for it yourself and not have to pay for it.
So. Right. Right. Exactly. Luke, have you done anything along solar or wind?
No wind. We don't. There is some wind tower stuff going in, but we haven't done anything personally for the operation now. There is some talk. There was a solar farm trying to go in south of us, but I think they're putting a stop to it because they want to, I think they wanted to line up 400 acres of farm ground with it. And that was a little too abrupt for putting it in. And I think they were talking like a 30-year contract on it.
Wow. Wow. Okay.
Yeah,
So talking about farmland, if 1031 goes away, Luke, what do you think that does to the farmland market?
Well, it probably will not help the Omaha landscape of people selling and moving the money and going somewhere else. But the way Nebraska taxes are, a lot of that money's going to Iowa. You know, if they're buying, they're selling land in Nebraska, they're going to Iowa, obviously, because cheaper land taxes. But it'll put an abrupt stop to it, obviously. They'll go, but I think 1031 has opened up. They're going to other avenues with that money. It doesn't have to go into land. I think it can go into other avenues, too, now.
Right. Yeah, and like Paul said, all we know is that there's some consideration of changes to 1031. We don't know exactly what it would be if there are even going to be any. But Nick, I've always felt like 1031 is kind of, it is underpinning that land market. It's putting some support in the land market that otherwise it might not be there.
I agree. I think everybody's thought that 1031s have helped prop the land market up along with low interest. And if you take that away, I mean, there's a lot of money that just disappears. You lose those people that realtors have looking for a bigger chunk of ground.
Right. So right. You know,
this whole Biden thing scares the heck out of me.
Yeah.
let's be real. They both scare me. They both scare me at a level, or you know, one at a different level than the other.
Right. Yeah. Right. Luke, are you? We're almost to election day. I mean, I'm doggone glad that we're almost there.
I'm so glad. You know, I'm on the border of Iowa, and I'll be so glad if whoever wins the Teresa Greenfield whatever race, I won't have to hear another ad for your guys' state again.
I will forward you the
charge more for that. Yes, I mean, I'm good. Go ahead.
Go ahead, Nick.
That's what's keeping me sane in all this down corn is they text you out of the blue and, you know, vote for so-and-so. And you know, you're lonely out here, and you're like, hi. You respond back, hey, how are you, you know? What do you think of soybeans right now?
Oh, good stuff. You guys, it's always fun to have you on. I appreciate what your thoughts are. I appreciate what you guys are doing out there. Just keep it up. Be safe, all right, Nick? Thanks, man.
All right, take care.
You bet. Luke, great to have you back on. Thanks, buddy.
Thanks, Chip.
You bet. That's Nick Ehlers, Eastern Iowa. Luke Lauritsen from Eastern Nebraska. Wow. Those guys, they're a lot of fun out on crop tour. They're a lot of fun to talk with, and they got their had their thinking caps on today. No question about that. All right, got to come back this afternoon. We got Matt Bennett from AgMarket.net, and tomorrow morning we're going to be looking at innovation in corn uses, talking about how ethanol played a role in a new production car speed record, and we're talking about market development for U.S. dairy. One farm family has a side hustle. Another's spouse had to step away for it to succeed. Listen to the Beyond the Field podcast by The Mosaic Company. Hear stories from farmers whose common thread is about changing the industry. Learn more at beyondthefieldpodcast.com.